This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Arming of Russia by South Africa with the vessel that landed in Simonstown is fundamentally unacceptable. We are confident that weapons were loaded onto that vessel, and I would bet my life on the accuracy of that assertion.
That was Ruben Bregetti, the U.S. ambassador to South Africa, on U.S. intelligence that South African weapons were loaded onto a Russian vessel when it docked at a Cape Town naval base in December. Details coming up. Also, Sudan's warring parties agreed on guidelines for allowing humanitarian assistance, but did not agree to a ceasefire. And voters in Mauritania head to the polls tomorrow for legislative and local elections. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. A war of words is brewing between the U.S. and South Africa after the American ambassador said he would bet his life on U.S. intelligence that South African weapons were loaded onto a Russian vessel when it docked at the Cape Town naval base in December. The South African government hit back, saying that while it would investigate the matter, the U.S. ambassador's remarks had undermined the relationship between the two nations. Kate Bartlett has more from Johannesburg.
Pretoria summoned U.S. Ambassador Ruben Bregetti on Friday amid a diplomatic spat that has put relations between the two friendly nations at their lowest ebb in years. The demarche was issued after Bridgetti's extraordinarily strident comments to South African media on Thursday, in which he said the U.S. had observed South African weapons being loaded onto a Russian vessel, the Lady R, which docked at the port of Simonstown in Cape Town between December 6 and December 8 last year. He said it showed South Africa was not neutral on the Ukraine conflict, as Pretoria has always claimed.
Arming of Russia by South Africa with the vessel that landed in Simonstown is fundamentally unacceptable. We are confident that weapons were loaded onto that vessel, and I would bet my life on the accuracy of that assertion.
The South African government seemed caught by surprise by the ambassador's comments, responding hours later that they were setting up an independent investigation into the matter led by a retired judge. But Vincent Magwenya, a spokesman for President Cyril Ramaphosa, also hit back at Bregetti's remarks, saying the U.S. and South Africa had already discussed the matter privately.
It is therefore disappointing that the U.S. ambassador has adopted a counterproductive public posture that undermines the understanding reached on the matter.
A spokesman for the Department of International Relations and Cooperation said Friday that Minister Naledi Pandor would also be speaking to her U.S. counterpart, Secretary of State Antony Blinken. However, Corbis Murray, Shadow Defense Minister for South Africa's main opposition Democratic Alliance, said the U.S. accusations were deeply concerning.
If these allegations are indeed true, it would be a gross violation of South Africa's international obligations and a betrayal of the trust of our most important trade and investment allies.
There have long been questions surrounding why the ship docked in Cape Town last year. Despite Western efforts to get Pretoria's support for Kyiv since the Russian invasion began last year, the South African government has maintained friendly relations with Moscow. The country's foreign minister held bilateral talks with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov earlier this year, and, despite U.S. consternation, hosted Russian warships in February for joint military exercises. Stephen Grust, a Russia expert at the South African Institute of International Affairs, told VOA that Pretoria could face economic fallout from its stance.
South Africa is jeopardizing its access to the American market through something like the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. Those privileges could be revoked, and then there would be real economic cost.
South Africa also has invited Russian President Vladimir Putin to attend a summit in the country in August, despite the fact there's an arrest warrant out for him by the International Criminal Court, and Pretoria is a signatory to the court. If he shows up, South Africa is legally obliged to arrest him. This has led to calls by some within the ruling party to look into restructuring the agreement with the ICC. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
As we just heard, the U.S. ambassador to South Africa, Ruben Brigetti, yesterday accused the government of President Cyril Ramaphosa of providing weapons and ammunition to Russia for its war in Ukraine. Senior VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain is on the line to brief us on the matter. Welcome to African News Tonight, Cindy.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So what is going on with the South African government, Russia, and what is the U.S. State Department saying about it?
Yes. Well, we've just had a flurry of diplomatic activity and breaking news on this story. And we had at the State Department on Thursday the deputy spokesperson, Vedant Patel, saying that was asked that the South African government says they have launched an inquiry into these reports that a Russian ship was docked at a South African port and possibly loaded up with weapons. And the State Department spokesperson Patel said, "We welcome the inquiry," but he said the deeply concerning piece of this is the docking of a sanctioned Russian vessel at a South African port in and of itself. So it would seem that that is a very serious matter. The U.S. is taking it very seriously. We just now had a gaggle with the White House National Security Council spokesperson, John Kirby, and he was asked about this and said he did not want to go into private diplomatic conversations, but he did say that the U.S. has consistently warned countries not to arm Russia, and said we've consistently asked people not to make it easier for Russian President Putin to kill innocent Ukrainians. So, yeah, this is a sort of a war of words, as we can tell. And I'm just seeing reports now, and I've only seen it reported by AFP, that that the South African President Ramaphosa had a conversation, reportedly had a conversation with Russian President Putin on Friday and agreed to closer ties. So that, of course, would put some salt into the wound, if that were true.
Talking about President Ramaphosa, his office said yesterday that there were currently no evidence to support allegations that arms were loaded onto this vessel, given the fact that South Africa follows a neutral stance on the war in Ukraine.
Right. I mean, South Africa is not not denying that this vessel, Russian vessel known as the Lady R, was docked there. As you said, the presidency statement says it's public knowledge. The statement says no evidence has been provided to date and that the government has undertaken an independent inquiry. But the opposition in South Africa has said, you know, even when this happened in December, was questioning why it was there and is saying either the government very well knew about this, that this was a sanctioned vessel, or they don't know, and that's also not a good thing. And the opposition has said that the South African government is putting economic relations, trade relations with the U.S. at risk. And you had the U.S. ambassador to South Africa, Brigitte, saying that he believes U.S. intelligence, saying basically that he would, you know, would stake his reputation on this. So it's looking like a it's looking like very rough for ties between the U.S. and South Africa. And of course, South Africa has said that it is neutral in this and has refused to condemn Russia at the United Nations for the invasion of Ukraine.
Cindy, does this expose something about Russia? Does this show that Russia has an ammunition supply problem in its war with Ukraine?
Yes, a very, very astute question there. Yes, I think so. We know that Russia has gone basically shopping or, you know, inquiring for weapons from Iran, even from North Korea. And now it would appear that South Africa is also on the list. And yes, we have long seen reports that Russia has a desperate ammunition shortage.
Senior VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain, thank you for your input.
Thank you so much.
Officials from the United States and Saudi Arabia say Sudan's warring parties signed a commitment late yesterday on guidelines for allowing humanitarian assistance, but did not agree to a ceasefire. Airstrikes and artillery pounded Khartoum again today. A U.S. official involved in the talks said representatives of the army and paramilitary forces, which have been fighting for nearly a month, signed the agreement in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, on a declaration of commitment to protect the civilians of Sudan. The declaration said this includes allowing safe passage for civilians to voluntarily leave areas of hostilities. Some 200,000 people have fled to neighboring countries. The agreement requires both sides to permit humanitarian assistance, allow the restoration of electricity, water, and other basic services, among other things. Volker Perthes, the UN Special Representative of the Secretary General for Sudan, said in Geneva today that mediators could reach a stronger deal in the next few days.
We expect these talks on ceasefire to start off again from today or from tomorrow. It shouldn't technically take too long to agree on the modalities of a ceasefire, but of course it's also a political question where the negotiators in Jeddah have to go back to their respective leaderships.
A senior U.S. State Department official told Reuters, speaking on condition of anonymity, that the two sides are quite far apart on stopping the fighting permanently. At Chad's border with Sudan, Sudanese security forces tell VOA they fled their country because they have neither supplies nor ammunition to fight their opponents, the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. As the rule of law breaks down in Sudan's Darfur region, analysts and aid groups say the risk of the conflict spreading to neighboring countries is high. Henry Wilkins reports from Kofron, Chad.
Refugees fleeing insecurity in Sudan's western Darfur wade across the river separating the country from its neighbour, Chad. Among those who have arrived here in Kafrun are members of the Sudanese security forces who say they've fled their country because they do not have enough supplies or ammunition to fight the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, which they say carried out a deadly attack on their town of Tendete, just across the border. VOA has withheld the policeman's name to protect his safety. He says he decided to flee Sudan in April. He says a policeman was killed and the state itself did not have the capacity to react. Other policemen also crossed the border with him by car, one of whom told other people to leave the town too. He says any policeman who met a criminal couldn't do anything. The police were unable to arrest or punish people. VOA spoke to another Sudanese policeman as well as refugee and host community leaders who confirmed 10 or 11 cars full of fleeing Sudanese security forces had crossed the border in the past 3 weeks. Refugees told VOA that insecurity and lawlessness have rocketed in Darfur since the country's civil war started in mid-April. Aid groups say they fear the instability could spread to Chad and other neighbouring countries. Will Carter is the Norwegian Refugee Council country director for Sudan.
It's a real risk, to be honest, and the regional refugee crisis is only just starting. But this is a hugely vulnerable region. The outflow of people is just one aspect of really a destabilizing situation for the whole region that Sudan is in some ways in the middle of. So we're very worried.
Mohammed Abdul Karim Abdeh is a community leader in Kafrun, which is hosting thousands of Sudanese refugees. He's less worried about insecurity crossing the border into Chad. He says the community didn't expect it, but the Chad government has assigned policemen to the border and sent reinforcements too. He says the community is not afraid and feels safe in Kafrun. Bakary Elmedni, a Sudan expert at Long Island University, describes how a Sudanese government breakdown could affect the region.
I think we're talking about a space of probably half of Europe and with 500 million people or more. That could be open to all kind of lawlessness and activity of terrorism and all kind of things.
He points out that the RSF is already aligned with rebel groups in Chad and the Central African Republic and that the instability is fertile ground for terrorist groups like Al-Qaeda and Islamic State to take root, as in other Sahel countries. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Kufrun, Chad.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Voters in the conservative West African state of Mauritania head to the polls tomorrow for legislative and local elections that will serve as a key test ahead of presidential elections next year. AFP reports 25 parties are participating in the first election since President Mohamed Ould Ghazouani in 2019 took over the vast arid country known as one of the few pockets of stability in the troubled Sahel. Mauritanians are due to elect half the parliament tomorrow, as well as 15 regional councils and 238 municipal councils. A second round of voting is scheduled for May 27th for the other half of the National Assembly. AFP says the only party to field candidates in all constituencies is the presidential party, El Ensnaf. It's heavily favored to win, especially in rural areas. Ghazouani, 66, is a general, considered one of the main architects of Mauritania's success against jihadism. He has not said whether he will run for a second term, but his candidacy is widely considered a given. A report by the UN Human Rights Office contains what it says is credible evidence indicating that Malian and foreign troops summarily executed at least 500 people during a five-day military operation in the village of Mora in central Mali in March 2022. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The report is the result of an extensive fact-finding mission conducted over several months by UN staff in Mali. It is based on hundreds of interviews with victims and witnesses, as well as forensic and other information sources, such as satellite imagery. The operation, which began on March 27, 2022, is described by the Malian authorities as an anti-terrorist military operation against an Al-Qaeda-affiliated group known as Katiba Massina. Witnesses described scenes of mayhem with a military helicopter firing on people. They told the fact-finding team that soldiers corralled people into the village center and randomly shot those trying to escape. Speaking from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, UN Human Rights Office regional spokesman Saif Magango says the horrors unleashed that day were followed by four more days of killings and horrific abuse.
In the words of the High Commissioner, Volker Turk, these are extremely disturbing findings. Summary executions and rape and torture during armed conflict amount to war crimes and could, depending on the circumstances, amounts to crimes against humanity.
The report documents at least 58 cases of women and girls who were raped or subjected to other forms of sexual violence, as well as many cases of people who were detained and subjected to torture and other ill treatment during questioning. Magango says witnesses told the UN investigators that a group of men who had been rounded up in the village were led away by soldiers and shot in the head, back, or chest, and their bodies thrown into a ditch.
Witnesses reported seeing armed white men who spoke an unknown language operating alongside the Malian forces and at times appearing to supervise operations. According to witnesses, Malian troops were rotated in and out of Mora daily, but the foreign personnel remained for the duration of the operation.
He says the nationality of the foreign personnel has not been confirmed, but press reports and statements from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs seem to indicate that they are members of the Wagner Private Military Company, a Russian paramilitary organization. Magango says the Malian authorities announced they were opening an investigation shortly after the attack in Mora took place. But he notes more than a year later, the outcome of the investigation is still pending. The UN Human Rights Office tells VOA it shared the report with the Malian authorities on April 18th, but no responses have been received so far. It adds the authorities have publicly denied wrongdoing by their armed forces. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
With the value of Zimbabwe's currency falling dramatically by the day, prices are rising and markets are demanding U.S. dollars for goods and services. That's putting pressure on the government to restore stability and what one official called sanity to the situation. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has more.
The price hikes are coming with elections due in a few months. Consumers have had their local currency value eroded, with an increasing number of basic goods now beyond their reach. Innocent Miko is a Harare resident.
As customers, we note that wholesalers and retailers raise basic commodity prices, which corresponds to black market rate, which is always rising. The truth of the matter is that there is no confidence in the local currency. The majority of local wholesalers and retailers now choose to price their items in US dollars rather than unwanted local currencies.
The threefold of the local currency, the RTGS, has left many who earn their wages in the currency vulnerable. Obed Masaraure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He says teachers and civil servants are among those left vulnerable.
Teachers are earning their basic salary in the local currency. They are earning their housing allowance in the local currency, their transport allowance in the local currency, even their own pension contributions in the local currency. So what this automatically means is that when the local currency has collapsed as it has done now, they've now been reduced to paupers, and it is now almost a criminal for the government to continue paying civil servants in RTGS. We urge the government to urgently pay all salaries in United States dollar terms. It's a mockery for someone to be earning something like 80,000 RTGS.
The monthly 80,000 RTGS is equivalent to just over 34 US dollars using today's black market rate. At official interbank rate, 80,000 RTGS is equivalent to just over 64 US dollars. The situation puts the ruling ZANU-PF under pressure with elections looming. Monica Mutswangwa is the Minister of Information.
The nation is being informed that Cabinet is concerned by spiraling prices of 14 basic commodities, especially bread, flour, cooking oil and sugar, and milling. The Minister of Industry and Commerce is already engaging the concerned stakeholders, including manufacturers, wholesalers, retailers, and other associations on this matter. And because of the urgency of this matter, Cabinet has set up a committee to quickly investigate, monitor, and make appropriate recommendations to Cabinet with a view to bring sanity to the situation.
The government has opened the borders for free importation of basic goods and assured the public that more measures are coming to ease the situation. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
VOA Africa Radio, we let the sound tell you the story. News, sports, science, and entertainment available to you 24/7. Tune in on your local FM stations. We are also available on the medium waves, 909 kilohertz and 1530 kilohertz. Our short waves are 6080, 15580, 4930, 15165, 15580, and 17530 kilohertz. VOA Africa, your trusted source.